They actually tore up some of the grass, however. That was one of the things that could get people kicked out. The authorities didn't want people having huge brawls that destroyed half the park. The general assumption was that if you were that powerful, you could afford a proper training facility. Unfortunately, he and Lisa might be getting into an uncomfortable zone between those two. When they finished, they dropped onto the grass to catch their breath. Lisa fell back and caught herself with her arms, staring skyward. Rick closed his eyes and took a moment to collect himself before speaking.
"That was pretty good. I know you're not interested in the combat side of things, but you're getting a lot better about counterattacking. Not much hesitation and over-defending now."
"Thanks," Lisa shot him a smile. "To tell you the truth, I actually put a bit of effort into my combat core. I figure if I spar this often, I should get better at it."
"Huh. How is your portfolio organized, then?"
"You know, I should just give you access to my profile. Kind of silly that I haven't done it already, given that you're my personal trainer and everything."
Lisa tapped on her phone and transferred permissions over to him, so he brought up her profile. Name: Lise. Pseudonym: Ether Tier, 13th. Ether Score, 626. Lucrum Generation, 59,500. Demonic Bond, 6,500. Current Lucrum, private data. Lise's Lucrama Portfolio. Foundation, 12,000, level 3. Professional Massage Lucor, 31,800, level 7. Transportation Core, 5,000, level 4. Legacy Core, 6,200, level 3. Combat Core, 4,500, level 2. Though he kept a neutral expression, Rick found himself a bit intimidated. Lisa had over 30,000 lucrum invested in her occupation. She was definitely a professional, probably worth more than he was as a trainer. Even adding up all of his combat cores, he didn't have that much in his profession. The presence of a demonic bond surprised him, but he decided that he couldn't hold it against her. He'd never gotten the slightest sense that she drew off one, and she definitely wasn't dependent on it. Perhaps she just had it as a backup source of lucrum or for security. Uncle Frank said that some people viewed them that way, though he thought they were still an accident waiting to happen. In any case, he realized that he was spending too long staring at her portfolio, and she was watching nervously, so he glanced up and smiled.
"Not bad. I see it classifies your main core as level 7. I don't have anything ranked that high."
"Thanks. I've put a lot of effort into it."
Lisa shook her head and then dropped back onto the grass with her hands behind her head.
"I've been there for a while, though. Seems like it will take a lot of work to break into level 8.
"This general combat core is probably fine for your purposes. I actually don't know what this legacy core is, though." Lisa glanced up at him in surprise.
"Really? Your parents didn't always bug you to be investing more in your legacy core? Mine never shut up about it. Not only is it one of the best ways to leave a birthright core to your descendants, it can really improve your health when you get older. I try to put some into it every month, but, well, you know how life goes."
His parents had not exactly been the type to invest money for the future, but Rick held his tongue about all that. When he reached out toward Lisa's portfolio in real life, instead of via the app, he thought he had a sense for it. The legacy core was actually similar to Graham's stake in that it slowly gathered strength over time. He could definitely see the benefits, though he was a bit irritated that things he'd never heard of were common cliches to people of higher classes.
"Plus, having one improves your ether score," Lisa went on. "It's one of those things people bug you about, but it really does make a difference. I couldn't have gotten my current apartment without a 600-plus ether score."
"Actually, I was going to ask you about that, too. Yours is really high. I don't suppose there's any trick to it?"
After looking at him for a while, Lisa closed her eyes with an odd expression.
"I'm not sure what to tell you, Rick. If you asked my parents and their friends, they practically believe that ether score is just how good of a person you are. They always told me you just need to be responsible and you'll get a good one. But you're one of the most responsible people I know, and that hasn't worked out for you."
She'd put effort into not insulting him, but it still stung a bit. Rick forced himself to focus on her words instead of the gap between them.
"My parents never talked about that kind of thing. I don't think the companies that calculate the score really care about certain kinds of responsibility."
"Yeah, it seems that way.
They had fully recovered by then, so they got back up. In the time they had been working, the park had cleared out a bit. As they headed back to the sidewalk, Rick found himself wincing and holding his stomach. Just a cramp or an after-effect from the pills?
Are you okay?
Lisa moved up to him, putting a gentle hand on his shoulder. It's some medicine I'm taking for training. Really does a number on me.
Oh, I've seen similar things before. I have clients that are just horrible to their bodies. They expect me to come in and make things better, like I'm a mystical healer or an actual doctor.
Instead of removing her hand from his shoulder, Lisa stayed touching him. He felt warmth spreading from her as she activated her primary lucrum core, and he didn't resist.
You have a lot of tension, and you've been hard on your lucrima. I trust you to know your limits, but keep an eye on it, or you'll injure yourself.
Rick sighed. It's about the same as you and your legacy core. I always intend to do the right thing, but life keeps interrupting. Lisa took her hand off his shoulder, but stayed close, giving him a smile.
You know, you've been fulfilling your side of the bargain, but I haven't really given you much in return. Literally just one massage for Melissa. Are you sure you don't want one yourself? It'd probably do you some good.
Part of him wanted to because she was offering a valuable service. Another part wanted to find out how her hands would feel kneading his muscles, but the part that won out was the one who thought it would end up really awkward. Thanks for the offer, but I'm under too much stress right now. Maybe once I get through some issues, I'll have time to relax.
Personally, I think you could use a massage more while you're under stress, but suit yourself.
They started walking again, but as they went, Lisa looked over at him in concern.
I'm not a doctor, so take this with a grain of salt, but I didn't like how your lucrima felt. Be careful with all the stuff you're doing, okay? People can permanently injure themselves with aggressive overtraining.
Yeah, I'll keep that in mind. Rick smiled at her, grateful that she cared, even if it didn't matter. This was like everything else. The best of intentions didn't really matter when life got in the way. Chapter 35. Power Budgeting. The next time Rick had a match, he tried to decide whether to take his pill before or after. In the end, he decided to take it before, just in case he was severely injured during the match. Though enduring the pain of his insides tearing apart wasn't a pleasant way to prep for a match, he disliked the idea of feeling that pain after a difficult fight even more. As if that wasn't enough, Granny Whitney still gave him one of her foundation-damaging pills from before. So even though his internal injuries felt like they had recovered, he went into the match dizzy and drained. Fortunately, he felt as though he had improved, or at least improved at fighting under such unfavorable conditions. It was far from a glorious victory, and he fell multiple times, but he was the last one standing. Granny Whitney just smiled at him and wrote a note in a small book. With the match complete, he had a bit of free time. Though he used some of it to recover and then train more, he also got the chance to watch Fist of the Sublime with Melissa. It was as gloriously stupid as promised, and they quoted each other lines from it excessively until the jokes got old. After that, however, he had an uncertain engagement, meeting with Emily. He hadn't seen her since the incident, and he wasn't sure if she would resent being forced into it. On that day, he got a text from Emily saying to meet him at some place called the Recluse's Retreat. He hadn't heard of it before, but some checking on the internet gave him the address and a description. They had a fancy website that looked like it was designed to impress wealthy clients, emphasizing the luxury of the place without telling him overly much about what it was actually for. In any case, he needed to hurry to get there in time, even using a taxi. Rick scrambled out the door and used the ride over to collect himself. Given how he'd fought alongside Emily, he trusted her, at least more than he trusted Granny Whitney, but that didn't mean their meeting would be easy. The Recluse's Retreat was a boxy, U-shaped building in the center of the city, unlike what he'd seen on the website, at least until he got to the main gate. There was a garden within, completely walled off by the front gate and the building around it. All of the photographs on the site had been cleverly staged to make it seem more expansive than it really was, though even the truth was more peaceful than the street outside. When he stepped up to the gate, a man in a uniform he'd seen on the site stepped into his path. The man had a polite smile,
but he also had a generation rate of over 50,000 lucrim and an active aura.
Excuse me, sir, but I don't believe I've seen you before. If you want to apply for our services, simply...
He's with me.
Emily stood up from one of the small ponds, having been so still that he'd missed her until she moved. The doorman immediately nodded to her and bowed away, then Emily waved a hand indicating that Rick should enter.
Let's get this over with.
What exactly are we doing here? He knew it made him look ignorant, but he couldn't help but look around as they walked into the garden.
You haven't been to a place like this before? Well, maybe not. Basically, this is the modern version of going to train alone on a mountain. You can't find privacy like that in a city, and even the mountains are crowded with tourists these days. But what you can get are heavily secured, completely private rooms. Most of the space in the building is dedicated to those.
That made sense to him, and the prices on the website hadn't been ridiculous, but it was still a level of luxury he'd never even considered. Would his training have been more productive if he'd done it in a specialized chamber instead of at his strip-mall gym or in his crappy apartment? He wasn't actually sure, but it was obvious why people would prefer this. One of the side doors led into what looked like a fully equipped gym, but when he glanced toward it, Emily waved him away.
That's just a secondary service. We're here for the place to train.
He followed her, looking over his shoulder as they went. This gym looked far nicer than the House of the Cosmic Fist, everything in pristine condition, and waiting trainers who had probably been selected for both skill and attractiveness. It didn't need to give itself a grandiose name, just called itself the Branton Recluse Center Gym and let the quality speak for itself. Trying not to let that get to him, Rick followed Emily into the building on the other side. She spoke briefly to the woman at the desk, then received a key and led them into a hallway that wouldn't have been out of place at a decent hotel. But when they stepped inside their door, it was obviously no hotel. There was no freestanding furniture at all, just a set of cabinets built into the back wall. The walls, ceiling, and floor were all heavily ether-enchanted, and when he tested them, they had just the right amount of give. Unless you were unleashing massive amounts of power, you could train in here without concern.
If you don't have access to a corporate or university training facility,
Emily said,
I find this is really worth the money. Aside from the obvious, the privacy shielding is excellent. Nobody can observe any techniques you use in here, so it's the perfect place to prepare in private.
Does that mean a lot of crimes are committed in here? His question prompted an odd look from Emily, but then she tilted her head to consider.
Most likely, though I'd imagine they'd be white-collar crimes. It's not like you could cover up a murder in a place like this. Plus, they do record everyone who enters and exits.
Yeah, it was just a question. Rick pulled off his jacket and set it down in one corner. I'm happy to learn, but I'm not sure what Granny Whitney wants you to teach me.
A little more meditating or sparring isn't going to help you all that much. We need to make a qualitative change to have an impact.
As she explained, Emily sat down with her legs crossed, so he went to sit across from her.
I thought we'd start with lucrim budgeting, unless you already know it.
Rick watched her thoughtfully. It sounded familiar, but I don't know the technique.
It's not a technique so much as a method of organizing your techs. Most people who focus on lucrim generation rate are short-sighted about this sort of thing, so they often don't wield as much power as you might expect. For example, someone who is rolling with 100,000 lucrim might generally have a lot of power. But when they exhaust themselves and only have a little left, they won't have enough to keep their cores operating at full power, and major weaknesses start to appear.
And this lucrim budgeting helps with that?
Essentially, you plan out exactly how much energy you're going to devote to each aspect of your lucrim portfolio. That way you won't overextend yourself and waste all of it on an excessive technique. Likewise, when you're running low on power, you're prepared to operate with less overall, while keeping yourself balanced.
As she explained, Rick felt a growing level of resentment rise within him. While admittedly he'd never heard of this exact technique before, it was based on the idea that he was an idiot who wasted any power that was given to him. He'd never had an excess of lucrum, so how could he waste it? Seething internally, Rick threw himself into the exercise. It started with mentally considering the exact proportions necessary and then modeling it in his aura, but he skipped all that. He'd been using those skills for years to get by. Instead, he switched directly to modulating his lucrima as she'd instructed. Emily frowned and tilted her head at him.
Reduce yourself to 50% of your maximum generation rate.
He did so without blinking.
10%.
That took a little more effort, but he managed it without too much difficulty. Emily gave him a long look, then sat back.
Maybe you don't need this exercise after all.
Do you really think I have enough lucrum to be throwing it away? His voice sounded angrier than was polite, but Emily didn't flinch even slightly, so he pressed on. I don't have some amazing job that pays 80,000 lucrum a year, and my birthright core was a net negative. Operating on low energy is what I do.
That isn't a universal law. I've seen fighters with only 10,000 lucrum who managed to squander half of it on unnecessary aura flashiness. But that isn't a problem for you.
While she didn't look exactly apologetic, Emily did give him a respectful nod.
It looks like your balance is already very efficient. You might be able to gain a little from the exercise, but not much.
To prove that he could, he lowered himself to 5% and stayed balanced, though that proved difficult. It wasn't that this budgeting technique offered no benefits at all, just that the approach treated him like he was a fool. Though it wasn't as direct as clients like Darren, it was still blaming him for the situation he had been born into as if it was his fault. Emily sighed and held up her hands.
All right, you've made your point. I can see that I've offended you. But I'm just as tired of people treating me like I was handed all the power I've worked hard for, especially when they're as sloppy as some.
His instincts were to argue back, but after having grown up with people like his parents and Uncle Alan, he couldn't deny it. I'm not saying you're entirely wrong. I just prefer to spend this time on something more useful instead of baby's first aura.
Fair enough. If you had your choice, what would you want to learn?
Rick hesitated, wondering if that was a test. Obviously, she wasn't going to teach him any of her own skills, and though the room was equipped for sparring, based on her attitude, he thought she didn't want that. He was tempted to ask for everything he could, but instead decided that this was a time for humility. You and others have talked about how lucrum generation rate isn't a good measure of strength. I'm afraid I still don't understand why.
Ah, that's not so much wrong as it applies less and less the further you go.
Emily sat back, considering it for a moment. At least she didn't find the question stupid or insulting, even if it seemed like a simple subject for her.
Basically, novices gather as much lucrum as they can and expend it just as fast. That's why generation rate is a good measure of their strength.
But even I invest what I can into cores, and I'm no expert.
That's right. You're a step up from novices. But the stage beyond that is to supply your own lucrum with cores that can generate it.
She held up a hand quickly.
Now, I know you've already started on Graham's stake. That's good. But you're still dependent on salary or purchases for your lucrum, which limits you.
Though that was obvious, he didn't think she was talking down to him anymore. I can see how it would make a difference once you have that established. How do you measure strength, then? Is there another shorthand, or do you just have to evaluate everything in a more complex way?
Based on how well you fight those above you, you should already know that more complex evaluations are more valuable. But yes, there's another way. You can't usually do it at a glance, but once you have experience with it, you can evaluate someone's entire lucrum portfolio. That gives you a much better approximation of strength.
What about me, then?
Go back to full strength.
Emily closed her eyes for a moment, considering, then nodded.
Roughly 22,000 lucrum invested. Then we add your generation rate on top of that, though since yours is hindered by the aura leeches, about 42,000 total.
Rick considered that quietly. That was getting into respectable territory, though he wasn't sure about this new method. I don't really have a point of comparison. Your generation rate is about 85,000 lucrum, but what's your portfolio? Instead of answering, she taught him the basics of how to approximate it. Though he didn't feel like he would be comfortable using it in real life for a long time, in conditions like this, he was able to get a better sense for Emily's strength. It was higher than he expected, and he paled a bit. Yours is high. Hundreds of thousands.
That's right.
Emily nodded, only slightly self-satisfied.
For comparison, Glenn has a generation rate of 110,000 lucrum, but he blows most of it. In terms of invested cores, he only has 25,000 or so. Now, his overall threat would still be evaluated as 135,000, since he can pour an enormous amount of strength into his cores. But you see the difference.
That explained why Glenn had seemed to defer to her, since Emily's overall threat was much higher than that. But he found himself more curious about something else. So, just theoretically, if Glenn and I had both nearly exhausted all our energy, we would be about equal?
More or less. The Lucrum intensity he regularly deals with has a quality of its own, but there's also intelligence and skill and other factors. Of course, since he can afford to restore himself regularly, you aren't going to fight him at low strength.
It was still something to think about. Emily seemed to relax as they continued the training session, and after a while, he figured it out. She'd been dreading giving a remedial lecture to him, but now that he'd earned a bit of respect, her irritation faded. She was sharp-tongued and not exactly kind, but she knew what she was talking about, and he found himself enjoying talking to her. They didn't spar or do any explosive training, yet he found it more useful than many hours in the gym. She taught him a few useful tricks that could spike his generation rate a little more, and more importantly, how he could apply that strength toward increasing practical power. She had less to say about how exactly to deal with his foundation, just confirming that it was probably fine for now and he could focus on other things. On the subject of the aura leeches, she had suggestions for how to pay them off faster that surprised him, making him wonder if she had experience with them. It must have shown on his face, because she gave him an odd smile.
How do you think I paid my way through university? Sure, I still have a few normal loans to pay off, but the biggest debt is always based in Lucrum. I graduated with a nasty set of leeches.
He hadn't considered that before, but considering the cost of good schools, it made sense. How many have you paid off?
Actually, I tried something else. I reconsolidated most of the leeches into a single one at stage two. It's a huge leech that will take a while to pay off, but the overall drain is much less than multiple leeches. I don't recommend you do that, by the way, since you can just get rid of the ones you're carrying without excessive trouble.
But if your generation rate is really 85,000, couldn't you get rid of it fairly quickly? Especially given how efficient you are with everything.
I could, but a stage two leech isn't that big a deal. Right now, it's more important for me to invest in other cores. Some of them generate lucrum faster than the leech can drain it, so it's actually a net positive to keep the leech. That's a bit advanced for what you're dealing with, though.
She sounded condescending, but he'd come to understand that she was just blunt. The concept seemed easy enough, and he accepted that it was indeed more advanced than he needed at the moment, so he set it aside. I think I understand everything we've talked about, but it's a bit difficult to put together. Will you give me permission to check your profile so I can see your portfolio directly?
No.
Emily didn't sound angry, but he didn't think that answer would change. Okay, that's fine. Just asking.
I'm not offended. Just private.
She tilted her head at him curiously.
I think we've done enough for today, but I wanted to impose on your own privacy. It's fine to refuse the questions.
No harm in asking.
Why exactly haven't you developed more? I've been running numbers in my head based on your efficiency levels, and you should be further along, even assuming you were less efficient in the past. Getting about 20,000 per year from work should add up.
Rick shook his head. No, the gym where I work pays about 15,000 lucrum per year. Emily's eyes widened just a bit.
I don't see how you manage with that a little, but I suppose that explains why you're so efficient.
My sister also has a medical condition. Instead of a normal soul, she has an ether void that burns up her lucrum. Though her condition has improved now, for most of her life I needed to drain a lot of lucrum to keep her healthy. She didn't answer for a long time, staring at him with a look he couldn't quite interpret. After a while, she closed her eyes.
I apologize, Rick. I made a lot of assumptions about you, and even after you disproved some of them, I kept making others. This is no comfort at all, but you've been dealt a pretty bad hand by life. That you've come this far is impressive.
You're right, it's no comfort at all. Rick smiled to soften the words. I just hope I can do enough that Mike and his buddies don't end up killing me when he gets his revenge.
Life isn't fair.
Emily stood up, stretching her body after sitting for so long, and glanced at him through her hair.
Realistically, Mike and Glenn are going to be handed a lot more things in life, so it'd be hard for you to catch up. But if you had the same advantages or were on a level playing field, I'd definitely bet on you.
Thanks, Emily. He stood up as well and went to get his jacket. At least I'm catching up a little, thanks to Granny Whitney wanting to use me. Most of her training is double-edged, but at least... Oh, no offense.
None taken. However much you trust her, you should trust her even less. For whatever it's worth, she didn't have any ulterior motives sending me to help. I'm not going to bail you out or shower you in lucrum, but I'm happy to help.
I appreciate it. On that note, Rick reached into his pocket and pulled out the bottle. Do you think I should be concerned about these? She has me taking them, and the side effects are pretty bad. Nothing I've read has been able to tell me if those are normal or if I'm going to cause problems for myself. Emily barely glanced at the bottle, instead opening it and examining the pills before looking back to him.
I'm no expert on medicine, so I can't tell you a lot. But based on some research I've done for myself, maybe you're right to be concerned. If there was a medicine that gave you an immediate benefit and caused long-term damage only after the match, Whitney wouldn't hesitate to give it to you.
Yeah, that's what I was afraid of.
I suggest getting a full medical exam, ideally as soon as possible. But it might make sense to wait until you can stop taking the medicine. Then you can probably get the damage healed before things go on a bad path. You need to be careful about any training that alters your physical fundamentals.
And like that, a bit of distance appeared between them again. Emily lived in a world where she could just get a medical exam if that was best for her health. That wasn't an option for him, and the surgery or healing would probably be far beyond what he could afford. Still, he thanked her as they headed out. It might not be enough to bridge the gap, but now he felt like he could at least see how far away his opponent stood. Chapter 36. Fight Patrons. As Rick signed his name on the form, he reflected just how many decisions in his life were controlled by circumstances. Yes, he was technically signing up for this underground match of his own free will, but given how strongly Granny Whitney had suggested that he take it, and the fact that she needed him to get more points before the big match, it wasn't really his choice. Rick slid the paper across the desk to Alger, who beamed with his usual cheerfulness, but Rick could barely focus on him. It wasn't just the blackmail keeping him in the underground. Joining a combat sect or a university had never been options for him. He'd ended up stumbling forward into whatever jobs he could get, leading to his present situation. Strangely, even though his life was so restricted now, in some ways he was more free than he had been before. He had the strength to stand on his own, and he'd managed to help Melissa gain control of her condition. Once he was done with this, he might be able to make his own choices.
Boy, you still with us?
Alger peered at him, and Rick realized too late that he had been spacing out.
This is a wonderful opportunity for you. I don't give fighters on the lower tiers named matches very often.
Yes, I'm very grateful. Rick did his best to push other thoughts aside and just smile. I want to participate in the upcoming tournament, but it's looking like it might be a struggle to get to 250 points.
I have no doubt that you will, my boy. You have the pluck and good heart to make it.
Alger paused, glancing toward the arena itself.
But you know, you still have some time until the match itself begins. Would you be willing to listen to an old man for a moment?
Sure. Though that made Rick a bit nervous, he absolutely needed to stay on Alger's good side, though the strange man's favor had problems all its own.
I understand you are thinking about fighting for Granny Whitney in the little tournament coming up. As it happens, I will be fielding a team myself, and I could use a good featherweight. Tom is developing much too quickly to compete in that power class, I'm afraid.
That made him wonder about Tom's development, and Rick wanted to check the other man's profile, but he resisted and just stayed focused on Alger.
You seem like a promising young man, and though it pains me to say this, I'm afraid that Granny Whitney is really not a very good role model for you. I think you could do much better if you were to work with my team. Trust me, I would take care of all the details, and I do very well for those who are working for me. What do you say?
For a moment, Rick considered it. Though Granny Whitney had multiple potential threats to use against him, the initial blackmail had been over the death of the Slayer. But she couldn't go to real authorities with something like that, which meant she'd go through Alger. If Rick jumped ship and went all in with Alger, perhaps he could negate that threat and get out of the tormenting relationship. But of course, it couldn't be that easy. Granny Whitney would come after him since he'd be effectively stealing what she'd given him at the beginning. Rick also wasn't sure that Alger would necessarily be any better. Better the devil he knew. No, better not to take the risk. Keeping all of that off his face, Rick responded with a generic smile. Sorry, sir, but I gave my word that I'd help her, and I like to think I'm a man of my word.
I see.
For a moment, Alger stared at him, his eyes no longer dancing. But a moment later, he smiled broadly.
It's good to see a lad with some backbone. I regret I didn't get to talk to you earlier, but that's how it goes. Have fun in your match.
That was obviously a dismissal, and if not, Alger made it obvious by getting up and rushing from the room. Rick didn't linger, trying to refocus himself as he prepared for the match. Though there was more time before the multi-tier event, he wanted to reach the 250-point entrance requirement today so that he'd have plenty of time to prepare for the tournament. As he headed out toward the arena entrance, he discovered one more obstacle in his way. Granny Whitney stood beside the double doors. She smiled pleasantly at him, but he could only groan.
This time, too, I thought the point was to do well and get enough points to qualify.
If you can't make it with a handicap, dearie, then you won't stand a chance in the tournament.
Her smile broadened, and she handed him another pill.
Now take your medicine.
He swallowed it, as usual, trying to focus on the benefits to his foundation instead of the impending dizziness and weakness. Yet this time, after he took it, she handed him a second pill. This one was pitch black and much larger than average, enough that he wasn't sure if he'd be able to swallow it.
This should help a little. Just be quick, dearie.
With that ambiguous suggestion, she pushed the pill into his hands and waited expectantly for him to swallow it. He needed to work up some saliva, but he managed. With that, she gave him a pat on the shoulder and pushed him toward the arena itself. Within, he found that the crowd was surprisingly large and raucous. Most likely that wasn't for his match. Given how things had gone the last time they were like this, he hoped not. But the fact that a match he participated in was part of a major event night indicated how his status had changed. Unless this was going to be another unpleasant surprise, of course. But this time he didn't see anything amiss. The match was supposed to be 3-on-3, a competition between some of the newer members of the Underground. According to Emily, it was also likely to be for the purposes of hyping up the lower tiers that people wouldn't generally care about. Alger really wanted this next event to be a huge one. Tom and Henry already stood on his side of the arena, waiting for him. Rick headed to join them, looking to the other side. At least he wasn't last. One of the other team hadn't arrived yet either. He didn't recognize one of them at all, a slightly older man, and the second was someone he'd seen in a few melees, a ranged aura attacker he couldn't name.
Oh, thank God it's you,
Henry glanced at him and grinned.
Based on what he was saying, I thought the third person would be some loser.
Rick raised an eyebrow. Was that an insult or not?
I really didn't know, man. Think we can do this?
Before Rick could answer, Tom stepped in, frowning at Henry.
Just who was saying that? Did you get a patron?
Henry gave them both a sly grin.
Maybe, but does it really matter? We need to focus on winning this fight.
It does matter.
Tom glanced once to the other side of the arena, then turned to face the other two.
This isn't really the best time to discuss this, but I guess we're waiting anyway. I've come to believe that there are three real contenders for the victor of the multi-tier match. Alger, Granny Whitney, and someone from the criminal underworld.
As he said the names, Tom pointed to himself, then Rick, then Henry. Getting it, several seconds later, Henry glared at him.
Are you suggesting something? Look, I don't really know my patron, I just know that he's a big deal. And that he helped me get a new bond to bail out my previous two. What does it matter?
Because according to my research, the hitman wasn't sent by Granny Whitney. And unless you think Alger is playing fourth-dimensional chess attacking his own fighter, then there's only one major source left.
You don't know that. There might be only three major contenders, but there are way more minor ones, and any of them could have been behind the attack.
Tom frowned and stepped up to Henry, who began summoning his demonic shell. Before things could get out of hand, Rick stepped in between them.
I'm not saying this doesn't matter, but whatever the truth is, we all need to finish this match. If we can't work together, that doesn't help anyone.
They glared at one another one more time, but they both stepped back. Hopefully, they'd be professional enough to work together, because he didn't relish the idea of trying to carry this match. At least one fighter on the other side was in the welterweight tier, so Rick was overall out of his weight class. The only bright side was the fact that he didn't feel too bad.
Though the first pill seemed to have kicked in, his vision only swam a little and the drain was perfectly manageable. Whatever that second pill was, it was canceling the side effects of the first, or delaying them. Based on Granny Whitney's warning, he wanted the match to be over as soon as possible. Fortunately, they didn't have to wait too much longer before the final contestant arrived, and he realized that he actually recognized her. It was the young woman with a spiked club, who he hadn't seen in quite a few matches. Did that mean anything? Possibly that she'd been recruited by someone else, but otherwise it didn't make a difference.
"Finally, it is time!"
Alger stood up from his usual position, arms spreading wide.
6 of the finest new warriors in the underground, all joining within the past year. This is their last chance to win glory for themselves through their grit and determination. Fight!"
Nobody expected his speech to turn into the fight declaration so quickly, but the sound rang through the air. The fight had begun. Chapter 37, 3-on-3. Before any of them could move, the old man stepped forward, one foot stomping down on the floor. Light green aura spread from his foot, a spider web of lines that raced across the floor toward them. Tom jumped aside, summoning his lightning, while Henry tried to move and didn't quite escape in time. The aura lines leapt from the floor, snapping around his leg and binding him in place. Since they didn't appear harmful, Rick decided not to dodge. The beginning of the match was the best time to take his opponent's measure. When the aura snaked around his legs, it burned a little, but it wasn't an attack. Instead, he struggled against the lines of power, testing how well they bound him in place. Meanwhile, the old man's teammates wasted no time attacking, as if they'd planned this. Perhaps they did, spending their time coordinating instead of arguing. While Rick tested his strength against the aura bonds, everyone else began to attack. The enemy aura user began hurling spheres at them, but Tom made all of them explode early with a few bolts of lightning. Meanwhile, the woman with the bat leapt at Henry, who barely managed to activate his demonic shell in time. He rocked backward from the first blow, cracks beginning to form in the shell, but then struck back, and the two of them began fighting toe to toe. Taking a deep breath, Rick leapt upward, tearing free from the enemy aura. It hadn't been all that strong in the end, though if it caught him unawares, it could hinder him at a critical moment. So long as he kept moving, he didn't think the old man's aura would be a problem. But the aura user targeting him would be. Since he was suspended in midair, he was the obvious target, and several explosive spheres hurtled in his direction. Fortunately, he'd chosen Bunyan's step for exactly this purpose. It propelled him through the air, past the spheres before they could explode. The aura user had only a moment to look shocked before Rick rammed into him shoulder first. His opponent staggered back into the chain-link fence and bounced off toward him. Rick tried to meet him with an elbow to the face, but the man sent his aura bursting in all directions, providing a cushion that pushed Rick back. Not by very much. He'd expected to have been thrown back or stunned, yet Rick felt fine. He'd experienced much worse than this. While his opponent looked on in shock, he reached through the man's aura to grab him by the neck, then slam him to the ground. Though he'd planned to hit him while he was down, the old man was advancing on them, and he was extending a lot of tendrils along the ground. Even if they were individually weak, if that many grabbed him, it could be difficult to break out. Not willing to risk getting trapped on the enemy's side of the arena, Rick leapt back across. That didn't mean retreating, though. He struck at the bat wielder from behind, and though she sensed his attack and pulled her weapon back to block it, the blow staggered her. She lashed out with her spiked club, and he managed to block the blow, but he regretted it. One of the spikes tore through his sleeve and drew a line of blood across his arm. Clearly, she'd been increasing her offensive abilities considerably. It looked like she'd dealt so many blows to Henry that he couldn't even take advantage of her back being turned. A moment later, lightning crashed down where she stood. Somehow she leapt back to her allies, so it only served to blind all of them. Rick stumbled through the blindness, grabbing Henry's shoulder under his crumbling armor.
"Get it together, man. They'll come again soon." "Yeah, yeah."
Henry shook his head sharply and restored the yellow shell of aura, but he didn't look well. Had some of her blows gotten through? Both sides took a moment to recover, but the rest wouldn't last long. In the brief pause, Rick realized how much the crowds were cheering. It seemed that the six of them had advanced enough for their fight to be interesting to watch, even if it wasn't exactly a heavyweight bout. Perhaps that was why the multi-tier event started with a featherweight class. Then there was no more time for idle thoughts, because the other side was attacking. Surprisingly, the old man began, not with the aura tendrils, but with aura bursts. They were weak and slow compared to his ally's sphere attacks, so Rick just dodged to the side. Henry let out a roar and charged directly at them. His demonic shell looked impressive, but charging into fire was a bad move. Rick was too surprised to provide support, so aura tendrils soon began snapping up around Henry's legs. Though Henry broke through them, he wasn't so lucky when the aura user attacked. Sphere after sphere slammed into his armor, increasing the cracks through it. Henry got off a wild blow that knocked the old man backward, but his armor was taking heavy damage, and the woman with the spiked club was getting ready for a counterattack. Before she could, Tom clapped his hands together, releasing a lightning shockwave just in front of Henry. It knocked all their opponents back and drove the old man to the ground, but Henry also staggered back. He didn't look well at all, yellow veins standing out on his face. By that time, Rick had moved to support him, trying to intercept the woman with a spiked club. She redirected to attack him with a clumsy swing. He easily deflected it, and realized it was a feint. As soon as he lost his momentum to deflect her swing, she sprinted directly at Henry. Tom launched a bolt of lightning at her, yet she spun aside to dodge it and came back around just in front of Henry. He let out another cry, flooding more power into his shell and swinging down. Her blow shattered through the shell around his fist and kept going, smashing through his helm as well. As pieces of solidified aura rained throughout the ecstatic crowd, Henry crashed back to the ground, his shell crumbling. Rick darted in, grabbed him, and rushed out with another bunion step. He was still nearly struck by the aura user's spheres and more tendrils, since it looked like the old man was back up. Damn it, then both sides still had three fighters. When he got back across the arena with Henry, however, he realized that even odds might be over-optimistic. Henry looked horrible, and his Lucrema portfolio felt utterly drained. It felt as though... no, hopefully not. While Tom kept the enemy at bay, Rick tried to slap him back awake.
Stay with us, Henry!
Nothing left.
He shook his head.
I drew all the bonds to the maximum. They won't give me any more. Damn demons.
From the corner of his eye, Rick saw a sphere of aura moving toward him, passing Tom's lightning defenses. If he grabbed Henry, he just might be able to make it. But Rick realized that his coworker was down for the count. He leapt away on his own just before the sphere hit. The explosion sent Henry sliding across the arena to the fence where he lay still. That meant it was 3-2, so they... Out of nowhere, the woman with the club was swinging at him. Relying on his defenses, Rick managed to fend her off, but each of her blows was heavy. Now that she was in range, she could wear him down, so unless Tom... At that moment, Tom released a bolt of electricity at her back. Yet she again moved with impressive agility, ducking beneath it so that the bolt hit Rick's chest, where it had always been intended to go. Rick channeled the current through his body and slammed his knee up into the woman's chin. The explosive force sent her stumbling backward, dropping her club. It was impressive that she didn't fall, but she was stunned long enough for Rick to close in and deliver several quick jabs that dropped her. Good. Perhaps the most dangerous of the enemy was down. Without her, the ranged attackers... Rick wavered on his feet, suddenly overwhelmed by a surge of nausea. He pushed past it, looked toward their opponents, but the room was spinning more. Was the effect of the suppressant Granny Whitney had given him wearing off? Somehow he missed the tendrils creeping across the ground until they gripped his leg. He tore free from them easily, yet instead of dodging away, he ended up staggering and nearly falling. His stomach was churning, and it felt as though he might vomit at any minute, but that was nothing compared to the disruptions flowing through his lucrum. What was wrong with him? Intellectually, he knew that the aura user would be targeting him soon, but he felt as though he was moving in slow motion. A sphere slammed into his chest, and he couldn't stop himself from falling.
Even his defensive core seemed to be spluttering, refusing to work properly. Another sphere flitted toward him, but at that moment Tom smashed down into the ground, releasing a wave of lightning that annihilated the sphere and drove their opponents away. But when he turned back, his expression was deeply concerned.
Rick, are you still in this?
I'm not sure.
Struggling to make the arena stop spinning around him, Rick gripped the floor and tried to push himself up.
Something's wrong. I'll be done soon, then it's up to you.
What?
There was no time to explain, though. Rick stumbled out toward their opponents, barely able to see. Whatever was happening, it was getting worse. If he wanted to have any more impact on the battle, it needed to be right that moment. Of course, his clumsy stumble made him an easy target. As both opponents focused on him, Rick forced his way through all the chaos in his head with raw willpower to use a single core, Bunyan's Step. As he activated it, he threw himself sideways. His body collided with both opponents, sending them all tumbling like bowling pins. It hurt like hell, especially since his defensive core was still faltering. Though his vision was growing dark, Rick saw bolts rain down on their opponent, dealing serious damage since they were off guard. They wouldn't recover from that. Another victory that left him half dead. As he passed out, Rick hoped it wasn't becoming a habit. Chapter 38. Consequences. When Rick woke up, he could feel that he'd received some healing, but he still felt like shit. Now that he had some perspective and wasn't in the middle of combat, he felt as though the side effects had been a greatly amplified version of the usual handicapping pill. They didn't just disorient and exhaust him, they disrupted his lucrema down to the foundation. He'd been moved to the dingy hospital building, but no one else was currently in the room. Rick forced himself to sit up and discovered that his things were beside him, including his phone. Though it hurt to stretch far enough to reach it, he got his phone and checked the results of the match. Special match performance. Participation, +10. Opponent KO, +10. Assist, +2. Knocked out, -3. Total reward, 19. Cumulative points, 252. Then he'd just barely made it. He could participate in the multi-tier tournament without needing to enter any more matches, presuming that Granny Whitney had been honest about her intentions there. He looked forward to it. As much as the fights honed his edge, he liked training that didn't leave him hurting this badly. As he looked at his match performance, he found himself wishing that it gave more information. How many points had Tom and Henry received? Most likely, Tom had gotten a lot of credit again, but Rick didn't really care about that. Arbitrary points didn't matter, only what he'd learned from the match. Henry concerned him more. If what he had said was true, then he'd severely overdrawn his demonic bonds. That would have nasty long-term consequences unless his patron somehow bailed him out. But after the match had gone poorly, Rick had to wonder if Henry's patron would want him at all. If it was really the same person who had sent the hitman, then he was ruthless.
Not bad at all, dearie.
Granny Whitney tottered into the room, beaming.
You have enough points to qualify now.
Barely.
Rick rubbed his forehead to try to massage the pain away. When the second pill you gave me wore off, it was almost worse than the effects of the first one. I wish you'd told me it had such a tight time limit.
Oh, no, it's not like that at all. The second pill didn't activate until most of the way through the match, after you'd used most of your lucrim.
She beamed even brighter, not even bothering to lie.
You managed to struggle through, though. I honestly didn't expect that.
At this stage, he barely even sighed.
That would have reduced my score even further. So you didn't expect me to qualify after this match?
No, I expected it to take another one or two fights. But since you've done well, I guess that gives you extra time to prepare yourself.
Can I have medicine to repair lucrema damage now?
Granny Whitney grabbed his chin, turning his head left and right as she analyzed him.
No, not yet. This is going to be much closer than I'd hoped, but I suppose that's the risk we're taking. For now, just keep doing what you've been doing, dearie.
Really? More of the same?
I think you'll find some nice benefits after having endured that last match. I'm not trying to poison you, after all. Just use you.
Rick sighed and accepted it. All right, fine. Just tell me what you need me to do. Then, once we get past this tournament, we're done.
That sounds about right. For now, just take these.
Granny Whitney dropped several items beside him, then turned and bustled out.
Lots to do, lots to do. I've told Emily to work with you, and there are enough pills there to last until the event. Don't bother me unless there's an emergency, dearie.
With that, she was gone. Rick took a moment to collect himself as he put away the new items she'd given him, then finally headed out himself. He felt a bit better now, and she was right that the disruption could lead to some new improvements, but he wished there was a better way to train. Though he intended to head home and sleep for a while, on his way out he checked into all the rooms with lights. He was looking for Henry, but he ended up stumbling across his opponents first. The old man lay unconscious, while the woman with the spiked bat, currently leaning beside her bed, grinned at him.
That was one hell of a hit.
Thanks. You have a lot of lucrum in that club of yours. It was rough to block.
You're way too casual about that. I'm used to smashing straight through people.
They went silent for a moment, so Rick decided to just move on before it got awkward. Listen, it's nice talking to you, but I want to check on my friend.
I assume you mean the one with the demonic bonds?
She bit her lip and peered into the hallway.
Just left of here. No, right, from your perspective, and down the hall. I saw them take him somewhere around there anyway.
Thanks. Now that he had a direction, Rick headed to find his coworker. Inside, he found Henry lying on his back, apparently unconscious. It looked as though a machine had been attached to him, but it had recently been removed. His life wasn't in danger, but the condition of his lucrema was shocking. Henry was deep in the grip of his demonic bonds, paying for all the power he'd been loaned for so long. To Rick's surprise, Henry opened his eyes and looked at him, so Rick walked in. You were right in the thick of things back there, man, Rick said. You doing okay?
Of course I'm not fucking okay,
Henry practically spat out the words.
I can't draw my usual power anymore, and on top of that, they penalized me for it. There's probably no chance in hell I can get into the big event. And if I don't, how am I going to pay off the bonds?
That's rough. When I had the aura leeches implanted, I felt...
Don't pretend they're the same.
Henry glared at him and turned away, staring toward the wall. For a time, Rick just stood there, wondering if it was worth trying to reach out again. Maybe what Henry needed was time, though it seemed more like he was embracing the bitterness. Rick had wanted to learn more about the exact penalties, but realized that since he still had permission to view Henry's profile, he had an easier method than asking him. Name, Hendog 69. Pseudonym, Ether Tier, 17th. Ether Score, 94. Lucrum Generation, 18,500. Demonic Bond, 12,000. Overextended, 20% repayment penalty. Demonic Bond, 4,000. Overextended, 23% repayment penalty. Demonic Bond, 7,000. Overextended, 35% repayment penalty. Lucrum Generation with penalty, 12,730. Current Lucrum, private data. Rick refreshed the profile just to be sure he was seeing the correct numbers. It looked like the power granted him by the demonic bonds had been entirely removed, actually reversed to drain his strength until the debt was repaid. While the impact might not be quite as immediate as the aura leeches, this would be a huge obstacle to any training Henry wanted to do. It seemed like it had knocked him down a couple tiers as well, and his score was below 100, which was truly abysmal. All because he hadn't kept the bonds under control. Now Rick understood just why his uncle was so adamant about not using them. If Henry didn't want help, Rick didn't intend to force it. Instead, he headed out, trying to decide how to spend his last month before the event. He texted Emily a few times to find out her plans. Apparently, she was trying to lie low in her last matches and sneak over the 250-point mark, so she would be busier than usual. But she said they might be able to find time, and he learned from her that Granny Whitney might require their presence for more than the single day of the event itself. He'd have to rearrange his schedule around that. Could he get off work? Technically, he'd be making more money with all of his matches, even with Granny Whitney taking most of the winnings. But he couldn't just ignore his boss's demands. Marching into the gym and loudly quitting might be a fun fantasy, but he had a sister to support and needed to fund his progress somehow. He couldn't do something that reckless. On his way out, he found Tom waiting for him. Though he had a bandage around his waist, he otherwise looked in good shape after the match. The taller man gave him a grim nod when he approached and fell in alongside him, as if he'd been waiting.
"Good job during the match." Tom glanced down at him thoughtfully. "I'm almost a bit disappointed we won't be able to fight each other during the event."
It didn't sound like Tom intended to jibe him about being in different power classes, so Rick just nodded. "But we're technically going to be on different teams, huh? You went all in with Alger."
"He's done well for me since I joined the Underground, yes. But it's not a real loyalty."
Tom shrugged.
"Granny Whitney strikes me as a shady character, but she hasn't done anything to me. The one who bothers me is the third player, assuming he was the one who sent the hitman. I want to take his fighters down. Hard."
"Are you suggesting some kind of alliance?"
"No, just talking aloud. Honestly, I'll be rooting for you more than Alger's featherweight, if it comes to that."
Tom turned abruptly and stuck out his hand.
"Good luck out there."
"Sure, you too." Rick shook his hand, squeezing back to avoid Tom crushing his grip. They let go and turned in opposite directions, almost as if they'd planned it that way. So far, he knew someone in 4 out of the 5 tiers, knowing absolutely nothing about the cruiserweights. Part of Rick wondered if he should do more research into the welterweights, meet the person Granny Whitney had found for the tier above his. In theory, he might be able to give them suggestions about fighting Tom. But that only made sense if his goal was to win, and it wasn't. Granny Whitney wanted to win, but he just wanted to fulfill his obligation and be done with it. Yes, he'd watch Emily's match, and he was curious to see what the fight in the heavyweight division would look like. Beyond that, investing too much in the event was only a distraction. This was just part of his life. He didn't live for the event. Once he finished, would he really leave the Underground behind? He'd gotten used to having the fights as part of his schedule and could almost imagine missing them. Without medicine painfully handicapping him, and with the ability to choose his own matches, maybe it could even be fun. Then again, someone had hired a hitman to disable Tom, so maybe even considering it was reckless. Deep in his own thoughts, Rick didn't notice that anything was wrong until his instincts warned him of power flaring ahead. He took a cautious step back and found himself looking at Mike and Magnus. Both Birthriders were at full power and flaring their auras.
"You've been running around for a while, and Father says I should end this."
Mike stepped forward with a smug look on his face.
"So we're going to do this the old-fashioned way, a challenge."
"That's a lot of lucrum just to issue a challenge." Rick kept his hands in his pockets and tried to look casual. They were in between the Underground and the illegal clinic, so in theory he had multiple allies nearby if things went bad.
"I, Mike McGuire, formally challenge you to a duel of honor."
Mike took another step forward and extended a legal document to him.
"A battle to surrender or utter defeat to end the conflict between us once and for all. You can see the time and place on the paper, and if you do not arrive, you will forfeit."
Rick stared at it for a moment, then looked up.
"Nah." "What?"
Mike's face went red and his aura spiked dangerously.
You can't just ignore a challenge. Are you a sniveling coward?"
"I'm not required by law to accept it. Maybe that would be a big deal if we lived in a village where everybody cared, but this won't even make the news."
"So you are a coward."
"I'm not the one challenging people with a tiny fraction of my power just so I can feel better about myself." Mike let out an angry roar and swung wildly, but Rick had predicted it. He slid just to the side of the first punch and took a step back from the second, letting him seem completely calm compared to Mike's rage. The truth was that despite all his progress, getting hit by a blow like that would be a serious problem, but he didn't think today would turn into a fight, so he could stay in control.
"Calm down, man."
Magnus grabbed one of Mike's arms and tugged him back.
"If you brawl with him now, it'll just get worse. Do what we planned."
"Right, the plan."
Mike let out a breath angrily and drew himself up. For a moment, he just tapped a message on his phone, then he looked back to Rick, and his expression became much less pleasant.
I figured you might try to take the coward's way out, but believe me, you'll accept the challenge.
Rick thought about snapping back, but the change in Mike's attitude made him too nervous. He didn't like the fact that Glenn was missing either. If they ambushed him here, the situation could turn bad, but he thought he could Bunyan step away before they dealt serious damage. Consumed by thoughts of battle, Rick was taken entirely off guard when his phone rang. It seemed entirely inappropriate for the situation, but Mike didn't look irritated. He just smiled smugly. Suddenly chilled, Rick checked the number. It was Melissa. Mike's smile widened. Chapter 39. Ultimatum.
Rick?
Melissa's voice was quiet and frightened.
Somebody just broke down the door, blew it off the hinges. I'm hiding, but I can see him in the entrance.
For a time, Rick couldn't say anything. The phone almost slipped out of his hand as he stared at Mike, who kept watching him with that same smug look on his face. But he heard the desperation in his sister's voice and couldn't let himself stay silent. Melissa, I'm sorry. This is my fault. Just stay there and things will be okay.
What's going on? Are you okay?
Please, I'll talk to you soon. When his sister went silent, Rick lowered the phone, though he kept the call going just in case. Then he looked up at Mike, staring directly into the smug bastard's eyes. The Birthrider looked pleased with himself, not cruel, so he could hope that this was only a threat. As his fear for Melissa faded, Rick found it replaced with rage. It burned coldly within him, not changing his expression in the slightest. He was at a disadvantage now, so he needed to wait for a better opportunity. But simply letting this go was no longer an option.
I wouldn't have had to do this, Mike said, if you didn't act like a little bitch. You should be grateful that this is all I'm doing. There was a time when I could have killed you for what you did to me, but I'll settle for humiliating you and making sure you never fight again.
Just give me that. Rick took the legal document and began looking over it. Most of it was unsurprising, the challenge terms that everyone knew well. But the limits? Instead of going until a fall or first blood, the match would continue until surrender or unconsciousness. Someone could deal permanent injuries under terms like that. Of course, the match would likely not be fair, so a brutal beating would only happen if Rick lost.
I tried to remove the surrendering part, to keep you from being a little coward again, but the lawyer said it was legally required.
Mike wiggled his phone and smirked.
But you know what will happen if you don't fight to the end.
I accept the terms, if you call off your goon.
Fine, fine.
Smug in his victory, Mike tapped another message. After a while, he heard Melissa let out a sigh of relief. Though the threat still hung over them, Rick was fairly certain that Mike had only intended an empty threat and wouldn't push it further. But that left Rick with little choice. The most he could do was buy a little time, which he needed to do given the date on the paper. This will interfere with the tournament, which I can't cancel.
Fine, move it after,
Mike shrugged scornfully.
It doesn't matter how long you delay, it's going to end up the same.
According to the terms, he couldn't delay the date more than a month, so Rick put the challenge off as much as he could. He bit his thumb hard enough to draw blood, then pressed it down onto the document. Immediately, Mike snatched the paper from him, grinning.
Signed and sealed. You're not getting out of this one, you bastard.
I'll see you there, and I'll fight to the end. Rick wanted to glare at Mike, but knew it was a better tactic to look cowed for now. Just don't hurt my sister.
Believe me, you're the only one I want to hurt.
With that, Mike and his friend strutted away, clearly viewing this as a victory. Rick stood in the street, watching them go. Now he was backed into a corner, so he had no choice. Feeling as much fury as he currently did, he wanted nothing more than to go to the match and pay Mike back for this. That would be difficult, likely impossible, yet those cold flames felt as though they could burn anything.
Rick?
His sister's voice was distant until he brought the phone to his ear.
God, Rick, I'm so sorry about this.
It isn't your fault. He was going to force me into this one way or another.
Can he really do this? Threatening someone is illegal. Can't we just turn him in or something?
Truthfully, he hadn't considered that. Rick thought about it for a moment, but it wasn't really a choice.
No, it wouldn't do any good. The combat sects occasionally kill people and have the authorities look away, and a company like McGuire Incorporated is even bigger than most of them. They can get away with this, at least as far as the law is concerned. Not as far as he was concerned.
Well, get home soon, okay?
Melissa took a slow, shuddering breath, then forcibly lightened her tone.
Wow, he really did a number on our door. These hinges are... Yeah, that's not getting fixed. Think we can get the landlord to fix it?
I think combat damage isn't covered by our lease, and even if he did, it would take him a month, if he's in a hurry.
Guess we'll have to buy another door, then. You know, I have absolutely no idea how much those cost.
Neither do I, but I suppose we'll find out. Talking about petty details with his sister helped him come down from the intensity of the confrontation, at least a little. Rick and Melissa stayed on the line, by unspoken agreement, moving to talking about anything other than the threat. They'd see each other shortly, but they needed to talk. When he reached the parking lot outside their apartment, his eyes were immediately drawn to their door. It looked like Melissa had propped the door up in the frame, but it was obviously in bad shape. Suddenly, Rick felt heavy, and mounting all the stairs to the apartment seemed impossible.
Fuck, man!
One of the meth heads loitering by the base of the stairs gave him an odd look.
Crazy fucking shit, man! Whatever's going on with you, real sorry about it, okay?
Thanks. Was that a display of solidarity from the local meth heads? Rick gave him a weak smile and the man shuffled away, presumably to smoke meth. The strangeness of it broke Rick out of his funk, and he took the stairs several at a time, hurrying to his apartment.
Was that one of those guys by the stairs?
Melissa asked through the phone. Yeah, apparently people saw the birthrighter break the door.
It was pretty loud, so I'm not surprised. Not that they did anything. I mean, not with somebody that dangerous.
Finally, Rick arrived, moving the door out of the way with his free hand. He found Melissa on the other side, waiting for him. They stood there for a while, both still holding their phones to their ears uselessly. Then they leapt to embrace one another.
God, that was awful.
Melissa pressed her forehead hard against his chest and gripped him tighter.
When he broke the door down, I had no idea what was going on, and it was just...
Don't worry. It's over now. He wanted to comfort her, but his mood darkened. They have what they want.
Yes, I heard.
She pulled back and drew him into the apartment, staring into his eyes seriously.
So you don't have any choice but to fight him. When does the challenge happen?
Barely 2 weeks after the end of the multi-tier event. So I need to get through that without getting too injured, because I doubt I'll get any help once Granny Whitney gets what she wants.
But can you beat him? Not that I don't believe in you, bro, but they're birthrighters with over 100,000 lucrum, right? And won't his father just hand him a bunch more